The views and opinions expressed by guests on this program are not necessarily the views of Thinking Bigger Business Media, Inc. or its employees. Welcome to Smart Companies Thinking Bigger Radio. Get the inside scoop on how America's most successful business owners transformed their entrepreneurial vision into reality. And listen in as some of the top business minds in the country serve up practical advice, tips, and insights for growing your business. Now, here's your host, Kelly Scanlon. The views and opinions expressed by guests on this program are not necessarily the views of Thinking Bigger Business Media, Inc. or its employees. Welcome to Smart Companies Thinking Bigger Radio. Get the inside scoop on how America's most successful business owners transformed their entrepreneurial vision into reality. And listen in as some of the top business minds in the country serve up practical advice, tips, and insights for growing your business. Now, here's your host, Kelly Scanlon.
Good morning and welcome to Smart Companies Thinking Bigger Radio. We're very happy to have you join us here this morning.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm very excited about our guest today. His name is Peter Strobel, and he has been called one of the world's great rainmakers, among other monikers that he has, including the most connected man in America and one of the most connected people in the world. He's also considered one of the top business strategists dealing with instant change, and he's developed unique techniques to address and refocus a company's strategy in just a few hours, not in several months. And for example, he has the ability to call a who's who's dream list of thought and business leaders who can recommend changes in direction that immediately put a company on the right path to success. Peter is a former director with Dell Computer Corporation and Grid Systems Corporation. He's also the chairman and founder at Zero Two Holdings. In addition to all that, he's passionate about children's issues, child abuse, foster care, and reforming education. In 2008, he created Friends of Peter to bring business and community leaders together to effect instant change as it relates to the critical business and social needs of a community or country. Peter, welcome to the show today.
Thanks, Kelly. Appreciate it. Thanks for allowing me to be here.
Absolutely. And, you know, as I said just a minute ago, you are often called the most connected man in America. And I know that I certainly saw that in action when I met you in St. Louis this past spring. So what I want to talk first about is, you know, you don't get that way overnight. When did you realize that your passion was creating connections? How did it become your mission? How did all that come about?
Yeah, no, I appreciate that, and that's a question I get asked quite a bit, and, you know, it's kind of like you're just living your life, and, you know, I remember a friend saying, you know, you think about the honeybee, and, you know, just being a bee and not realizing that he's pollinized, you know, a bunch of plants to be able to create flowers, and, you know, I was just doing what I do, and I think most really good business people tend to have a network of people around them, and they're certainly people that they probably have confidence and mentors that they trust, that they pick up the phone and call when they don't know something. And what I found is I've always considered myself probably the least important in any room that I'm in, and I don't consider myself to be the smartest person, but I definitely know I can pick up the phone and call people that are smart. So I never as much wanted to do it as far as connections, as much as just validating for me what we might do and what a potential path might be for a business. And it kind of clicked with me back in the 90s when the dot-com era was going hot and heavy. And I'd actually got a call from the chairman of a division of Enron. And Enron, you know, at the time they were creating an $11 billion startup in this division. And he asked me, he was referred by some friends of mine, and he said, Peter, we need some help because we can't get to the highest levels of the businesses that we're trying to do business with, which is kind of a who's who of corporate America. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of surprised by that statement because I remember thinking at the time Enron was, you know, in the top 25, you know, largest companies in America.
Right.
You know, they were a huge success when it came to energy at that time, and the perception of who they were was pretty significant. And I couldn't believe that Ken Lay couldn't pick up the phone and call somebody to help him get into Citigroup, as an example, when you got $1 billion of your money in Citigroup.
Right.
And that's where I just started to realize is that, you know, when I told him the people that I knew, and he was kind of surprised by that. I had other friends of mine who were probably more average business people that weren't necessarily the most known, but when they asked me, you know, who do I know at Boeing or who do I know at DuPont, or and I started just sharing some names, and they'd come back and say, you really know that guy? And when I started to look back and at who those people were, when I met some of these people, they might have been a director, they might have been a senior manager, they might have been a junior vice president, and over time, you know, they evolved into different positions. So a CFO that I might have known a few years ago, you know, has a path where they become the CEO of a company potentially, and I wasn't following who they were becoming over time as much as the fact that I knew them. And when I asked my friends to reach out to them, and when they used my name, not only were they treated with a lot of respect, they were actually, in some cases, were actually invited to people's homes for dinner. So
wow.
That's when I started to realize that, wow, you know, in whatever I've done in my life and whatever network I've been affiliated with, I guess I haven't burned a lot of bridges. And for whatever reason, people respect my friends, and that seemed to mean something.
Mm-hmm. So throughout your career, you built up, obviously, a very strong network. And as you said, many of us do that. But it was when you got that phone call and then more subsequent phone calls that you became really purposeful about this and it became your mission, correct?
Well, it is and it isn't, because the term connector is not a term that I like, because I don't see myself as a connector. What I do see is, I think everybody can put themselves in this comment, is that I think everybody has friends that they can call when they need to know something or get kind of a understanding some subject matter. And that's what I see. And what I don't want to do is I never want to be in a position in any business situation where I'm making some assumption about a direction a company needs to go in without other counsel. And so what I'm really doing is calling friends to validate things for me. And in that matter, in the way I happen to do it, happens to be connecting people with other people. So it's less about I want Kelly to know this person and more about, hey, Kelly has a situation that I need to have validated. And by the way, the top person that I know can validate it happens to be another person that might own a publishing company or be somebody that she says, God, if I could ever meet that person. And that's just absolutely the way I do it. You understand. So.
Yes, got it. So let's talk, though, about relationships for just a minute. We hear a lot about that. Everybody knows how important relationships are in business. But sometimes what I witness and what I hear and experience from people is that they're not giving it any more lip service than, say, like customer service. You know, you hear a lot about customer service, too, but oftentimes it's just lip service. And when you're talking about relationships, you're obviously talking about authentic relationships. So what's the distinction that you're making there? It's something that is very important, and I'd like to have you explain that to our listeners, the distinction you're making.
Sure. I'm Canadian, and growing up in Canada, we have a lot less people in the country. There's a lot less competition in the world of business, and you can tend to get second and third chances when you make a mistake. You don't have that in the United States. So when I first moved to the U.S., the first thing I became very aware of is that what we have in the United States aren't relationships, they're transactions. And so as long as you have a title, as long as you're tied to some business, as long as you live in a certain community, as long as people think you have a certain amount of money, then people want to talk to you. And the minute that it doesn't happen, then it all falls apart almost immediately. So, you know, I would always say a relationship, and for me a real relationship is somebody that's going to be there in the good and the bad.
Yes.
And they're not going to judge you. And they're not going to take the world's sense of what the perception is of you. They're going to know you for real and say, this is somebody that I want to help. And that's what the difference is when somebody, when you're in a crisis, and this moniker that I have of the most connected guy in America is, I'm not the most connected guy in America. I can guarantee, and most people that are connected aren't going to tell people they're connected. But there was an organization called NetWorlding did some things with the Chicago Tribune in Chicago to have a contest in regards to who they found to be the most connected people in America. And I had been involved in a situation where I was trying to help friends of mine who were involved in the city of Houston get out of a situation after Katrina, the hurricane.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people were coming into the city, and there was a lot of people coming out of Louisiana, and the issues, they were starting to tie up government buildings, and they couldn't get people out of those buildings. So what I was looking at is, in a crisis, you should be able to call your friends, and they're not going to say to you, how much am I going to get paid for this? And they're
right.
Certainly not going to say, well, am I going to get any press or PR or No, it's none of that. It's just because you're my friend.
Okay, how much
and that's
is
the distinction.
Do
if we don't have those types of people in our lives, then we're probably pretty sad people. And we've got to develop those types of relationships. And that's my view is when you're in a crisis and you can make a call, who's there for you matters. And in the Katrina situation, when the city of Houston was in a crisis, within 18 hours, I ended up having governors, former governors, CEOs, people that were experts in crisis on a conference call. And none of us were sitting there going, how much do I get to pay this hour? It was more about what can we do to help the city. So.
Right. It's the right thing to do. And you
sure,
know
exactly.
People who can help you. So this is all very logical. This all sounds very it also sounds very human, as a matter of fact. So why is it that so many people have trouble developing relationships that are authentic? What is the stumbling block?
Well, I think the first thing's pride. You know, anybody comes into a room, you can immediately sense ego, and you can immediately sense people that are there for themselves. You know, if people are around me, and I ask my friends, I said, if I ever sound like I'm a name dropper, do me a favor, slap me. Right? Because when I get insecure and I'm around powerful people, you know, I might say things that are kind of stupid. But the bottom line is that what I love is when if I'm sitting there and I meet somebody that I can see is genuine and they're really a good person, I have zero doubt that I can help them. There isn't anybody in my Rolodex I wouldn't introduce them to validate an idea or concept. So it's just an immediate thing, and that's it. I think when people start coming in, and it's me, and it's mine, and it's I, and this turns people off, and that's not anything that I want to have to be involved with. And I'm very genuinely and instinctually tied to people that are in it for not just for themselves; they're in it for the greater good, and that really makes a difference for me.
Right, and. When you were talking, you've been weaving this throughout some of our conversation here today about getting people on the phone who can validate ideas. I suspect that that ties into the concept of instant change. Can you tell us about what you mean when you refer to instant change?
Sure. I call instant change, it really is not so much about my situation is going to change this minute. I'm instantly going to be richer, even those types of things happen. Thanks to our lottery system and things like that, but instant change really defines that there's now a different way of thinking. And right this second, we're not alone. There's other people that are helping guide us in regards to the future, and it's that. And there's hope, and with that hope comes faith. And it's that moment where we realize that perceptually, and this is the one thing we all deal with is perception. And everybody has a perception of who we are, who they think we are. I don't care whether you're an individual, whether you're a business. I don't care if you're a community or a church or a nonprofit. We all have perception issues. And when you sit down and if you put perception as the number one agenda item on your agenda, the next time you have a meeting, you ask somebody, what's your perception of me or what's your perception of my company, you're going to hear some really interesting things. And if they know you and they've known you a long time, they're going to say, what are you talking about? Well, if somebody asked you to describe me, how would you describe me? And if you listen to the words they use, you're going to know instantaneously whether that person really gets you or whether they really get your company. And so what happens is because it is a relational world and now with social, the last thing you want is people to be defining you in a way that you don't want to have be defined or describing your company or products in a way that really aren't honoring your uniqueness. That's the kind of stuff that really gets me going. So that's where I want to sit down and say, look, at all those people that you care about today that are in the relationship with you that you trust, just ask them what their perception is of you and hear the words that they use to define you. And then after that, you have every right in the world to say, can I share my perception of you? And you can get to some pretty, pretty gut-wrenching conversations with that statement.
I can only imagine. Yeah.
So that's really the basis. Let's define our perception, what people think of us, are the people that are around us, who are on the bus, and I'm saying whether they're our employees, whether they're our investors, whether they're our customers or our vendors, do they get us? Do they really understand what we do? Does our board really understand what we do? And that's, well, we can get in a whole conversation about that because that's where I think there's a huge weakness.
Well, sure. I mean, and there could be some responsibility. If you're not hearing what you thought that you would hear, there's probably, in many cases, I would assume, there's probably some responsibility for yourself to make some changes. I mean, there's a lot of times people have a disconnect between what they want to do or what they say that they're doing and what they're actually doing, and so it may not always be that the boards or the friends or whoever's perception of you is entirely wrong. It's just that you're maybe not acting in accord with how you want to be or what you want to be doing, I suppose.
No, you're right. And, you know, I think the thing that's most difficult when you look at a business is because it really is who you're in relationship with in the business world. And, you know, who is your customer and who is your investor and who is on your board and who are your executives and what are their backgrounds? It's all perceptual. And you know, I used to believe, being a marketing guy, that perception was reality. And I know more than anything, as I've gotten older, perception is not reality. It has nothing to do with what's real, you know, and especially in the social world. So what really becomes down to is it really comes down to, you know, friends say I'm the best that they know at B2B. And I was like, business to business? That's really, I really honor that comment. And they, no, belly to belly. And I was like, that's really funny, you know. Because what I want to create, I want, it's the people that are going to sit across the table from you that will be in a room with you. You know, I jokingly say to my friends, and anybody who knows me knows this, whenever I meet with them in public, I always say, thank you for meeting me in public. You know, or thanks for seeing with me in public, or thanks for eating with me in public. And they're always laughing, you're so funny. And I'm going, no, that's the biggest compliment. Because if other people come in that know me, it's going to be very evident that you are with me and you're sitting with me. And that's, and sometimes, and in most situations, who you are is very significant for me, you know. And I never want to lose that ability to be able to honor people for that. And it's not about how many people you're linked to. It's more about who's going to be seen with you in public and are they really there for you in a time of crisis. That's the critical stuff.
Yeah. Well, and I referenced earlier that I had seen you in action, because what you're, you know, some of the things that you're talking about here, people may still be a little bit skeptical about that and think, okay, so he's got the same, you know, he goes to places and he calls to sell on the same few people or whatever. But no, when you did a session in St. Louis at a small conference that I attended, and he called various people randomly up onto the stage and asked them about their business and about new ideas that they might have on the table, or what's the challenge that you're facing. And you got very high-level people out of meetings to take your call. This is the true power of authentic networking and who you hang out with and who respects you and who you respect. It's the power behind that is just mind-boggling. So,
go ahead. You know, and truthfully, Kelly, I mean, it's not anything that I could say. There's nothing special about it. What really is significant is the fact that I think you can't get to that level and have those conversations unless you respect people's time. And the other things you can't do is you can't have wasted conversation.
That is right.
And I can tell you, I don't care who it is, when you're in a meeting and you hear people, where it starts off with, how is everybody, do you have a good weekend? That's a waste of time.
So
when you have a high-level meeting, I don't need to prove to somebody that I know somebody. When somebody gets out of a meeting or somebody says, hey, Peter, how you doing? You know, how's Kelly? You know, I know people who are listening to that know they know me, right? And so the next stage is, what can we focus on? And I always want to make sure that any conversation we're having is strategic to their business, either strategic to them personally or, if it is possible, strategic to their business. Because they'll tell me, the reason why I get out of that meeting is because I know you're not hanging out with people that are average. And you're probably going to ask me to respond to some perception around something that's going to be strategic to my business. And a lot of times these guys will say, you know, I take what you, with the people that in the conversations that we have, even though it might be a minute or 2 minute conversation, and I'll take that back to my executive team. And I'll say, hey, CTO, have you ever heard of this subject matter? And they go, no. And they wonder if their CTO is really on the latest edge of thinking. Or they'll go back and say to their CFO, does this mean anything? Or hey, would this company be something that would be strategically an opportunity for us to acquire? And they go, no, absolutely not. We already researched them. And he's thinking, well, this, in the 2 minutes that I just talked to the CEO of that company, what he just shared with me is so strategic to our future, I can't believe we're not looking at them. And it's stuff like that where, again, it's an instant validation of something, of an idea, a concept, or of a person that now really changes the way they look at their own business. And I think in most cases, if it wasn't that, they just don't do it because I'm nice, and they don't do it just because they want to spend time with Peter. That has nothing to do with it. It's absolutely strategic to business during the day.
Tell us about your efforts at Friends of Peter. You obviously are well respected in the business community, and this also translates into the social realm. You have a lot of causes a lot of things that you're passionate about, helping other people when it comes to children in particular. So talk to us about why you founded Friends of Peter in 2008 and what are some of the things that you're doing. And then I'm going to throw another question on top of there so that you can just talk at length about this if you'd like to. But segue that into why it is important for business people at any level, even if you're a very, very small business, to be involved in community, to be involved in social efforts. So what are your thoughts on that?
Friends of Peter was started in 2008, and it was more in reflecting. I had a friend of mine that was on the verge of homelessness, and I asked him, when he started sharing, I asked him who his dream companies would be that he'd want to work with. He hadn't been in the workforce for quite a while, so I knew it was going to be very difficult to help him find something. And again, when you're on the verge of homelessness, when people do their background and credit checks, you're probably not in their best situation. So he was 100% really relying on my relationship to kind of validate who he was, because there, all the transactional things that people would look at didn't make sense. And you're not out of work for a long time if people like you, if you're really good at something. So and I started to think about that, and I was talking to a friend of mine who was a former CEO of Walmart, and I said, this guy would be a good guy for you to know. I'd really like you to know him. And he said, I'd love to meet him. And so here I was, and I was thinking about it. My friends are my friends, and I'm not going to judge based on whether somebody's on the verge of a struggling situation, homelessness, divorce, or anything, or whether somebody's the CEO of a company. I mean, we're all just human. And
right.
What I found is my friends honored each other. And my friend that was the CEO was completely honoring of the other guy, and he didn't judge him. He didn't judge him being less of anything. And what happened is we together opened a few doors where we both were the reference for him and helped him find a job that would allow him to feed his family. And I remember him phoning me up and saying, Peter, this couldn't have happened without you. And it was like, that's what life's about. And he was like, what do I owe you? And you don't owe me anything, just do the best job you can do. And someday we'll have a barbecue at your home and you can give me a burger, And that's where Friends of Peter, and I started to think about it because what my friends do, and Kelly, you do this as well, we all have friends that are experts in an area, and I call them 5 percenters, because with experience, when you hear a problem and you only need to hear 5% of it to get it, that's a lot of experience.
Yes.
And the 5 percenter doesn't waste time. They get it very quickly. You don't need to get into babbling, rambling conversations about a problem. They say, I got it. Now the next thing is, now what do we need to do to fix it? Mm-hmm. And what happens is when you can start putting names and relationships around who you are, and I always say this, I can change the value of a company overnight, literally the value and the valuation of that company overnight, based on putting key relationships into that business that now change the relational value of that business.
Right.
And I could argue with Wall Street in regards to why all the transactional data, quarterly results, inventory levels, all of those things don't really matter as much as the relationship value.
Right.
Because who have you been in relationship with? What companies for a long time? Or do they honor you? Or are they just there because you're cheap? Because you're the one? That's where you start getting into how you can break a business down. But when I sat back and looked at my Friends of Peter, I wanted to change immediately. I don't care whether it's a community. I don't care whether it's a person's life or a business. I wanted to change the perception and the value of who they were to the world. And that's what my friends would do by saying, if it matters to you, it matters to me. And that's it. And that's where it came from. So.
Well, and it boils down to advice that most moms give their kids. It's like, if you hang out with those people, that's what people are going to think that you're like. And if you hang out with these people, that's what they're going to think you're like. It's such common sense in so many ways, but very, very difficult as not just as kids, but as we get older, it's very difficult sometimes to actually put into practice. And great advice, obviously. If you were to issue a challenge to our listeners today, now that they've had the opportunity to hear this conversation, to understand what you talk about when you talk about authentic relationships, what would you challenge them to do?
Well, I challenge them to do this. I'm going to make a blanket statement about listeners, and I'm probably going to be pretty close to being accurate based on 15 years of doing this, that most people that are listening to this don't even really know who they are. They don't really understand who they are uniquely in this world. And because of that, the people around them don't really know. And you can also judge those people don't even really know who they are, right? So what happens is we have to come back to a basis of who are we and what value do we present. And we have to be able to value the relationships around us. Are they helping us or hurting us? And so the thing I'm going to challenge people with, I think we can do this over the phone. I could define what I call my home plate.
And what?
I call it the home plate.
The home plate, okay.
And the home plate is who you are uniquely. And I don't care whether you're uniquely the business or whether you're uniquely the person or whether it's uniquely the family or whether it's uniquely the church or the nonprofit. Doesn't matter. It all falls into this basis. Because mission statements and vision statements don't define anybody. And in crisis, nobody agrees with your mission statement or vision statement. And that's what's interesting. Because when you deal in the world of crisis, you've got to be unbelievably capable, but you're going to do things now. And I've been involved in companies where there's $10,000 in the bank and 100 people have to get paid the next morning. That's a crisis.
Yes, that
so
absolutely
is. So you have to figure out very, very quickly, because investors are going to say, does this business need to exist? Am I going to put any more money in this thing to be able to save the money I've already got in it? Or am I going to put it into receivership? Mm-hmm. People are already starting to look around. Employees are already leaving. People are unhappy. Suppliers and vendors aren't being paid. There's nothing good about the perception of your business. And then what happens is we're sitting back and going, this has got to change, and it's got to change now. And the only way we can start is by asking this, what's the perception that people have of us? So if I go back to this home plate, and the home plate is just a square, it's a box, you know, and the first corner of the home plate is the top right-hand corner, and it stands for passion or love. What are you passionate about? What do you love? I can tell you, Kelly, that you're passionate about people, you're passionate about small business, you're passionate about women in business. You're passionate about communicating and helping people be all they can be, but you're also passionate about every business growing and sustaining itself to make a difference in the community. And then when you know something, you give back. So that's what you're passionate about. And why would I ever want to introduce you or ever bring somebody that's an investor to the table around your business that doesn't honor that about you? I won't. So you don't ever negate any corner of the home plate. Otherwise, it's a no. It's not even an argument. It's just no. Right? The next corner of the home plate is the bottom right-hand corner. And it stands for uniqueness or beauty. So I know what you're passionate about. I know what you love. But what makes you unique and beautiful in regards to that? Well, your background in publishing, your background in the success that you've had, academic credentials, your husband, your family, all the things that uniquely make you is who you are.
Sure.
And why would I ever want to bring anybody to the table that doesn't honor that? I wouldn't, right? So we're not going to even go there when somebody says that they want to belittle you. And, you know, anyway, so those two, everything on that right side of the home plate at this point is you, who you are individually. Mm-hmm. And you can do that again as a business, what our business is passionate about and what makes our business unique and beautiful.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So the bottom left-hand corner is where we get into what we're going to do to make a difference. So the impact or truth is the next corner, you know. And so the impact is based on what are you going to do to make an impact. And is that impact based in truth? What have you done to make an impact? What have you done that's truthful that has made a difference in line with what your uniqueness is and in line with what your passion is? And then the last corner is called sustainability and legacy.
Yes.
So now I'm sitting here and I put all this together. I want to take my passion, what I love, my uniqueness that makes me beautiful, to make an impact that's based on truth, that's going to be sustainable to the point that it creates a legacy. And if I define my business in that, because that top left-hand corner is the one that every business struggles with, how do we sustain what we want to do, what we're passionate about, what makes us unique? When I hear people say they don't have competition, I'm going, oh, no trouble, right? Everybody knows that. But when I hear people say, who are you uniquely, and I'm sitting here, and I keep going back to, you know, every business was started because somebody had a dream. In some dream, they felt that it had to be realized, and the only way they could realize it was by creating a business around it. And they might have just started doing it themselves until they realized we're making some money and we need to have other people on board to help me, and all of a sudden you've got a company, right? But it doesn't change the heart and soul of why that business was created. And every time I've seen a business that's in trouble, it's because you go back to the basis of when they were started and how they were created, and people forgot that. I don't care if it's 50 years. If you go back to the basis of why a company was created, and people say, well, time changes and it's not relevant. No, it is relevant. Because every time I've ever gone back there with a board of directors, and I'm talking about Fortune 50 companies,
mm-hmm.
and divisions, and say, why was this company created? Let's go back to those foundations. And you go back to that. You understand how far you've come from who you were in the beginning, and you realize every time you bring in a new person to lead your company, they have their own dream and vision of where you're going to go. And if they don't understand what the core values are that you're basing your business on today that got it to the point that they're coming, they're going to start taking you down a road that's not the road you want to be on.
Right. That vision becomes very fragmented. Over the course of 50 years or so, it just becomes fragmented to the point that nobody remembers why it got started. And certainly there are marketplace changes, but that doesn't mean that the passion and the initial vision and intention can't come along with those marketplace changes. So powerful stuff here today, Peter, and we could go on and on. I have several more questions to ask, but our time is up, and that just means that hopefully we can have you come back on another time and talk. Especially want to hear more about at some point about some of the social issues that you're involved with, specifically the children's issues and so forth. And I know that you have websites that people can go out and visit. Can you tell us where they can go to find out more information about you and about your causes and about authentic relationships?
Sure. They can go to friendsofpeter.net, and we're kind of tying things together with that. And then if they go to 02, Z-E-R-O, and the number 2.com, 02.com will become a more of a corporate website, but today it points to Friends of Peter. There probably isn't a city in the U.S. where I don't have some friends that I'd love to introduce people to. But if anybody ever used your name and gave me a call, I would do whatever I can to honor them and help them. I've followed you for quite a while, Kelly, and I know you've had friends of mine on the show, and they've been nothing but, completely complimentary of who you are and what you stand for. And it was an incredible honor for you to ask me to be part of this today. I can't wait till the next time. So.
Well, it's absolutely mutual. Thank you very much for your time today, because as you said, time is precious and we don't want to waste it. So thank you very much for being here today. And to all of you out there, you heard what he said. If you use my name and you need a connection, I shouldn't use that word, but if you need Peter to put you in touch with somebody, he's happy to do that. Thank you so much again. And the rest of you, thanks for tuning in today. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next week.